At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Welcome to the Deep Dive. We're your shortcut, basically, to getting really well informed without, you know, drowning in all the information out there. Today, we're taking a big plunge into a massive book of wisdom, Timothy Ferris's Tools of Titans. It's all about the tactics, routines, habits of, well, billionaire icons, world-class performers. Our mission for you listening is to go beyond just a summary. We want to pull out the really potent bits of knowledge, the surprising facts, the actionable insights from this huge work. It's really about uncovering that practical advice from some of the world's most successful people.
That's exactly right. I mean, Ferris took on this immense project, didn't he? Interviewing over 100, maybe more, world-class performers, super diverse fields, athletes, investors, artists, you name it. And he just meticulously wrote down their daily practices, their core philosophies, trying to figure out what really fuels that kind of achievement. The book itself, well, it hit hashtag #1 on the New York Times list. And a fun little detail, Arnold Schwarzenegger actually wrote the foreword.
Arnold, nice.
Yeah. It's really a goldmine of insights for anyone looking to, you know, optimize their own life.
Okay, so let's unpack this. Ferris didn't just collect stories, right? He saw these powerful patterns across totally different professions. It's almost like finding a secret language these top people speak. What were some of those common habits or mindsets?
It's really fascinating because, yeah, despite all the different paths, certain habits were, well, almost universal, like mindfulness. A surprise, 80% of these people had some kind of daily meditation or mindfulness practice.
80%? Really?
Yeah, 80. It wasn't just some niche thing. It was like a core ritual.
Yeah.
They found it helped with decision-making under pressure, clarity, you know, in really high-stakes situations.
Wow, 80%. That really hits home, doesn't it? It shows that managing your internal state isn't like a bonus. It's non-negotiable for them. Helps keep them grounded.
Absolutely. And then beyond that, some interesting physical routine stuff popped up, like many guys over 45 either skip breakfast entirely or ate super lightly, just a pattern he noticed for that group.
Huh, specific.
Yeah, and sleep, big focus there.
Yeah.
Things that let you control temperature, like the Chillipad was mentioned a lot, that kind of advanced mattress pad tech. It shows they see sleep not just as rest, but as, you know, a critical performance tool.
Right, sleep optimization is clearly a big deal. And that breakfast thing is interesting for that demographic. Any other shared habits, like intellectually or work-wise?
Yeah, definitely. Books. They often recommended the same books. Yeah. Stuff like Sapiens, Poor Charlie's Almanac, Influence, Man's Search for Meaning. Shows a shared intellectual foundation, maybe.
Mm, shared reading list.
And another one I found cool, lots of them listen to a single song on repeat to get into deep work.
Oh, I've heard of that, like finding your focus track.
Exactly. Simple trick, but apparently effective for getting into that flow state.
I like that. What about how they approach projects? Any strategies there?
Yeah, spec work came up a lot. Speculative work.
Spec work.
Meaning they'd do a whole project on their own time, their own dime, and then show it to potential clients or buyers.
Wow, okay, so proving value up front.
Totally. Very proactive. Results first mindset. They invest first rather than waiting for someone to ask. And maybe the most fundamental thing, a shared belief that failure is not durable.
Failure is not durable. I like that. Powerful.
It's not just bouncing back. It's this core view that setbacks are temporary, not defining. And they consistently manage to turn weaknesses into like unique advantages.
That's powerful. It makes you wonder, though, how they actually do that. Like, practically. It's more than just saying the words, right?
Yeah. Oh, for sure. It often ties back to how they learn. Failures aren't endpoints. They're just data. You know, keep iterating. Turning a weakness into a strength. It's not ignoring it. It's digging into it, finding that unconventional angle.
That's a perfect segue, actually, into how these titans optimize themselves physically and mentally. This is where it gets really interesting with insights from like extreme athletes to researchers on the cutting edge.
Oh, yeah. Take Amelia Boone, obstacle course racer. Her personal motto, basically on a billboard, no one owes you anything, really sums up her self-reliance.
Intense.
Totally. And get this. She became a champion just 8 weeks after knee surgery.
8 weeks. That's insane.
Right. She says a lot of it was mental resilience, built by deliberately training in horrible conditions. Cold, rain, rehearsing the worst case scenario, she called it.
Wow. Mental toughness training.
Exactly. And for recovery. She used stuff like a rumble roller, you know, for muscles, rolling her foot on a golf ball.
Yeah.
And regular sauna use that pops up again. Apparently boosts endurance, growth hormone.
Sauna again. Okay.
And here's the fun fact. Pre-raised breakfast.
Oh.
Pop-Tarts.
Pop-Tarts? Seriously?
Seriously. Yeah. Pop-Tarts.
I love that. It just shows there's room for quirks, right? Even with all the optimization. Speaking of cutting edge, Dr. Rhonda Patrick, she's deep into aging and health research. Some really forward-thinking ideas there.
Oh, absolutely. Dr. Patrick suggests, like, banking stem cells from your teeth during dental work.
Banking stem cells from teeth.
Yeah. Something most people wouldn't even think of. Super proactive about future health. And she's another big fan of heat conditioning, like saunas, for hormones and endurance.
Okay, so heat therapy is definitely a recurring theme here.
Seems like it. And then you have Christopher Sommer, the gymnastics coach. He gets really precise about physical training concepts.
Right. He makes a key distinction.
Yeah, between flexibility that's passive.
Right.
And mobility, which is active range of motion with strength and control.
Okay. Mobility has control. Makes sense.
His philosophy, work on the stuff that embarrasses you. Your weak points, because those are usually what hold you back. And he hammers consistency over intensity, prevents injuries, builds progress long term.
Work on what embarrasses you. That's interesting advice. Now, Dominic D'Agostino, the researcher focused on metabolic therapies, he's big on specific diets, isn't he?
Very much so. He advocates the ketogenic diet as like a foundational therapy and fasting too for cell health, maybe even cancer prevention. He lists several strategies for metabolic health. But, you know, it's interesting. While D'Agostino is a strong keto proponent, it does bring up that important point for listeners, right?
Yeah.
Are these one-size-fits-all diets really the answer for everyone?
That's a really critical point.
Because, as the sources themselves suggest, how people respond metabolically to diets, it varies
yeah.
a lot. So personalized experimentation seems pretty key.
Absolutely. Everyone's different. Got to figure out what works for you. Then there's Wim Hof, the Iceman. His methods are kind of legendary.
Oh, yeah, the Wim Hof method. Using cold exposure for, well, apparently improving mood, immune function, even fat loss. He also does intermittent fasting and these unique heart-to-heart hugs for connection. He sees cold exposure as this purifying force, like hitting a reset button on life's pressures.
A purifying force. I like that. It's more than just physiology. Peter Attia, the longevity doctor, he brings a very data-driven approach.
Yeah, Attia really focuses on strength training, more than traditional cardio, actually, for managing weight effectively. And he tracks his own glucose levels constantly, uses one of those continuous monitors.
Like a CGM.
Exactly. Gets real-time data on how food and activity affect his metabolism,
way
beyond just a single blood test snapshot. He warns against those snapshots, actually. Says focus on the trends over time.
Trends over time. That's smart. Much better picture. Charles Poliquin, another famous strength coach, he had a pretty strict take on nutrition.
Oh, yeah. Very clear rules. He believed you had to earn your carbohydrates.
Burn them.
But being fit enough, like under 10% body fat, he'd say. Strict rules like no drinking calories, well, except maybe dry red wine, and minimal fruit.
Wow. Intense.
His core idea.
The basics are the basics, and you can't beat the basics. Just nail the fundamentals. He also highlighted specific types of magnesium, like threonate for sleep and cognition, saying they could help lower biological age markers.
Earn your carbs. That's memorable. And Ferris himself, he has personal hacks too, right?
Yeah.
For sleep, travel, fitness, he does. Besides the cool mattress pad, he uses spinal decompression, things like inversion tables to ease pressure, improve sleep, and for travel.
Yeah.
He packs a gym in a bag, you know, essential little things, foodie floss, sliders, a mini rumble roller, stuff like that to stay consistent on the road.
Gym in a bag. Smart. Okay, so we've covered the foundational habits, the physical optimization, but a lot of success comes down to mindset, right? How you think. Let's pivot now to the mental frameworks, the strategies these titans use in business, in life.
Right. And a lot revolves around discipline, ownership, challenging assumptions. Jocko Willink, the retired Navy SEAL, his mantra is discipline equals freedom.
Discipline equals freedom. Seems backward at first.
Yeah, but his point is structure and self-control actually free up your mind, improve decisions, help you hit goals. He also pushes extreme ownership.
Extreme ownership, meaning?
Taking full personal responsibility for outcomes, especially for your team. No blaming. Even when things go wrong for reasons outside your direct control, you own the response.
Owning the response. Okay, that makes sense. Peter Thiel, PayPal co-founder, investor, he had some pretty contrarian advice for entrepreneurs.
He did. He basically says, don't wait around to start a business.
Yeah.
And he kind of downplays the idea that failure is always this great teacher. Sometimes, he argues, it's just failure, a waste of time.
Controversial.
Yeah. He stresses being different, solving unique problems. Don't just follow the herd. Challenge the basic assumptions everyone else makes.
Don't wait. Challenge assumptions. And maybe failure isn't always the best lesson.
Yeah.
Got it. Chris Sacca, another big investor, he has a different angle.
Sacca talks about having a beginner's mind, asking simple, almost naive questions, because that's often where new insights come from.
Beginner's mind. I like that.
He also says empathy is crucial in business, and that good stories versus data. Well, stories often win. Emotional connection beats spreadsheets. He was personally motivated, really intensely, after some executive called him a rounding error.
Wow, turning an insult into fuel. That's powerful. Tracy D'Annunzio, the CEO of Tradesy, she had strategies for personal growth, too.
Yeah, she created a complaining diet. Just consciously deciding to stop complaining, stop negative thoughts, builds resilience.
A complaining diet. Interesting.
And for entrepreneurs, she advises practicing pitching to investors you don't really care about impressing first.
Practice pitches on low-stakes targets.
Exactly. Build confidence. Work out the kinks without the crazy pressure of a make-or-break pitch. Smart way to build those pitching muscles.
Very clever. Phil Libin, Evernote co-founder, he talked about how companies need to change as they grow.
Yeah, the rule of 3 in 10. He says companies basically have to reinvent how they operate every time they triple in size. So from 1 employee to 3, then 3 to 10, 10 to 30, and so on.
Reinventing at each stage.
Right. It's not just scaling. It's changing the company's DNA. And he also really emphasizes storytelling. Crucial for getting your vision across in business, making ideas stick.
Storytelling keeps coming up. Rimit Sethi, author, entrepreneur. He has this concept that's really caught on with creators.
The 1,000 true fans idea. Basically, you don't need millions of followers. Just about 1,000 really dedicated fans can provide a sustainable income. Focus on quality relationships, not just mass numbers.
Quality over quantity.
Exactly. And his strategy, value-based pricing. Give away tons of great free stuff to attract smart people, then charge premium prices for your absolute best high-value offerings. He's all about principles over tactics.
Principles over tactics. Good distinction. James Altucher, another entrepreneur, author. He has this daily creativity practice.
Yeah, the daily idealists. He just forces himself to generate ideas every day. Not just business ideas, anything.
Like exercising a muscle.
Right. And to beat perfectionism, he says aim for 20 ideas, not 10. The point isn't 20 good ideas. It's that aiming higher takes the pressure off each individual idea needing to be brilliant. Frees up your mind.
That's a great hack for getting unstuck. Simple but smart. Cascade, the DJ and producer, he uses a simple metaphor for priorities.
Yeah, the jar metaphor. Time management is like filling a jar. You have to put the big stones in first, your main priorities. Then the smaller pebbles and sand, the less critical stuff can fit around them.
The big rocks go in first. Nice visual. And Naval Ravikant, investor, philosopher. He offers some fundamental choices for dealing with difficult situations.
He boils it down to 3 options, always. Change it, accept it, or leave it. It's about making an active choice, not just staying stuck.
Change, accept, or leave. Powerful framing.
He also talks about the 5 chimps theory. Basically, you become like the 5 people you spend the most time with. Your mood, your behavior. It's heavily influenced by your close circle, so choose wisely.
Your social environment shapes you. Makes sense.
And fundamentally, just be honest. With yourself, with others, integrity is key.
Okay, let's shift one last time to the deeper stuff, creativity, meaning navigating life's big challenges. These insights can really change how we see things, can't they?
You really can. Rick Rubin, the legendary music producer, his creativity routine starts with an ice bath and getting sun exposure.
Ice bath again. To spark creativity this time.
Yeah. And he really stresses passion in art. Being true to yourself. That's where the best stuff comes from, he believes. Authenticity.
Authenticity. Makes sense for art. Casey Neistat, the filmmaker, he found creativity somewhere unexpected, too.
He totally channeled his anger over getting a bike ticket into that viral film, Bike Lanes.
Right. Turn frustration into creation.
Exactly. He also believes you can always compete on hard work. Even if you aren't the smartest or best looking, you can outwork people. And he encourages doing outrageous things creatively, like that Nike Make It Count video.
Oh, yeah, where he just took the ad budget and traveled the world?
Yep, instead of a normal commercial. Pushing boundaries.
Love that. Jon Favreau, the filmmaker, he got some great advice from Glenn Close.
Yeah, apparently his teacher. She told him, go for truth and you'll hit funny along the way.
Yeah.
Again, authenticity. It resonates, whether it's comedy or drama. And Favreau learned that long-term cultural impact often matters more than quick financial wins.
Truth leads to funny. And legacy over quick cash. Good lessons. Ed Catmull, Pixar co-founder, he has a really comforting perspective for anyone starting something new.
Yeah, his understanding that we all begin with suck.
Love that.
Right. Initial failures, rough drafts. They're not just okay, they're necessary. Part of the process. He emphasizes continuous learning observation. Learn to see, not just draw, he says. Mastery comes through iteration.
We all begin with suck. That's incredibly liberating to hear. Josh Waitzkin, chess prodigy, learning expert. He's big on mental space, right?
Huge on it. Minimizing distractions is key for creativity, he argues. Prioritizing empty space, mental downtime over being constantly busy or engaged.
Creating empty space. So hard these days.
Tell me about it. And his learning method. Master the small things to grasp the big picture. Learning the macro from the micro. Quality over quantity in practice.
Micro to macro. Interesting approach. Brené Brown, the vulnerability researcher, her message feels so relevant to everyday life.
Oh, absolutely. She encourages leaning into discomfort, embracing vulnerability. That's the path to bravery, she says. Her core idea. Afraid and brave can coexist.
Afraid and brave together.
Yeah. Ooh. Fear doesn't cancel out courage. They often go hand in hand.
That's really profound. BJ Miller, the palliative care doctor, he offers such a unique, almost beautiful view on life and, well, facing the end of it.
It's really moving. He uses stargazing as therapy. Advocates delighting in perishability, finding beauty in things that don't last, like the miracle of a snowball.
Delighting in perishability. Wow.
And for supporting people who are suffering, his big thing is listening, bearing witness, just being present with empathy, not trying to fix it or give advice. He calls it art as medicine. Two simple things like baking, bringing joy. And his quote, don't believe everything that you think.
Don't believe everything that you think. That hits hard, questioning our own thoughts.
Yeah, so important. Then Tim Kreider, the essayist, he's this sharp critique of modern busyness.
Ooh, I feel this one coming.
Right. He says being busy is like a badge of honor now. But often it's just masking anxiety or fear of facing deeper stuff. Maybe a lot of what we do doesn't really matter that much.
Right. Yeah.
He argues for idleness, play, not just for relaxing, but because they're essential for creativity, for productivity. His line, life is too short to be busy.
Life is too short to be busy. That's one to sit with, a real challenge to how we live. And finally, Ferris himself shared something incredibly personal about mental health, didn't he? Puts a lot of these tools in context.
He did, very openly. Talked about struggling with depression, even suicidal thoughts, back in college, at Princeton, despite having all this external success.
Wow, even then.
Yeah. What helped him turn a corner was realizing the impact his death would have on people who loved him, and then actively using practices like meditation, exercise, gratitude, helping others, ways to interrupt those negative cycles. And crucially, he stresses how vital it is to seek help if you're in crisis. Normalizing that conversation.
Such an important message. Wow, okay, what a deep dive that was. From daily habits, like really disciplined stuff, to these profound philosophies on meaning and purpose. It's an incredible toolkit. Clearly not a rigid manual, right? More like a huge collection of experiments people can try.
Exactly. And what's so interesting is how many of these different tools point back to the same basic human needs. Focus, resilience, connection. Stuff like that.
Yeah.
If you look at the big picture, the tactics vary widely, right? But the underlying principles, self-awareness, intentional action, those seem pretty universal. But remember, knowledge is only valuable when you understand it and apply it. You got to think critically. What actually resonates with your body, your mindset? Because like someone in the book said, optimal depends on what you're optimizing for.
Absolutely. Optimal depends on what you're optimizing for. So here's the final thought for you listening. What is your ultimate definition of success? And maybe what's one small tool from everything we talked about today? What's one thing you're going to bravely experiment with this week to get a little closer to it?